I have a most interesting subject to discuss with you this morning. The Sydney Minister of our Lord and Savior. When we were
We're doing it, Pete. It's number three.
Oh, my goodness.
This is it.
We got this far.
I think we're good. I think we're done.
Wow. Yeah, that was good. I think we did a good job.
Best trilogy since Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, that's right. Since the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, is that a trilogy? Trinity.
No, that's probably more of a trinity.
But one led to one, which led to the other. It was first the Holy Spirit, which then gave formation to the creation of God, which gave formation to Jesus.
Well, you know, it depends. If you're Orthodox, it's a trinity. But if you're into some radical theology, it's more of a trilogy. One comes after the other. Yeah, so, you know.
Oh, I like that. Wow. That was a nice little radical theology. Yeah, bringing it in, bringing it full circle. I like it. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great.
We should do an... everybody, welcome to the Fundamentalists podcast.
Yeah. I was hoping... Can you do it in a Northern Irish accent?
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Fundamentalists podcast.
No, that's not good. Remember what I taught you? Hi, noi.
Har, nar, bar, har.
Yeah, that's better.
Say it, do it.
Hi, noi, brine, kai.
Hi, nar, barn, car. I can't do it at all. I can sometimes, though, do you get this where I will be hanging out with someone and I'll hear their voice as my thoughts? Do you ever get that?
Oh, I don't think I do.
I get it with you because we hang out a lot, but I also get it with Mike, and I'll get it with Delman, anybody.
You do a very good Delman impression.
Oh, thank you. If you know who that is. It's a weird thing where I'm like, why am I? It's just like I hang out with somebody for so long that then when I'm not hanging out with them anymore, it's like it's a weird thing. Yeah. And then once I realize that it's happening, it stops. But
there are people who they can hear an accent for just a few days or a week and they start to mimic it.
Yeah.
And usually they're good singers.
Oh, really?
I don't know why, but I've heard that if you take up accents very easily, that I guess you're just very good with your voice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We were doing the Valleycast podcast last night and Steve started doing a Scandinavian accent and it made me laugh. It made me laugh like a schoolgirl, like a tiny schoolgirl. How you feeling?
I'm good.
I keep forgetting we have to do intros. That's what I keep like we said the name of the podcast, but I'm Elliot Morgan.
And I'm Peter Rollins.
All right. I think we're good.
Well, as a professional host, you're doing a great job.
I know, right?
Yeah, you're good at this.
Don't forget to like the video. Crap. Wrong medium.
Yep.
This is horrible. All right. You know what? We're going to quit. Shut it off. So, Pete, you're a philosopher. You're a writer. I am a stand-up comedian, and I do comedy on the internet as well. And so that's who we are. Do you want to explain today's subject a little bit? And then I can get into my fun story of why it's so perfect for this episode.
Well, yeah, that's funny because we were both independently thinking about this. Mm-hmm. I listened to a podcast that was all about words you can't say and shibboleths, basically words that define if you're on the inside or the outside of a particular group. And then I was talking to you and you were telling me that you were actually just off the phone
with a shibboleth.
Yes,
which is a wizard that can put a spell. No, it's I was on the phone with a television network that they want to I'm going to this thing called NACA next week, which is a conference for college campus activities. And so I'm going to be doing stand up there, and if it goes well, I will be performing at a number of colleges. But
by the way, yeah, shibboleth and NACA do sound both like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to fight the NACA, and then after that, you can get to the shibboleth. But I don't know if you know this or not, but many colleges currently have a particularly hostile environment toward non-politically correct entities. To the point that such comedians as Dave Chappelle, I think Seinfeld as well, have said that they won't perform at colleges. And so basically this docuseries is interested in talking to me at NACA about the environment and whether or not I'm changing my material or changing the words that I'm using to appease the audience. And the call went really well, but like the other thing is like, I almost wonder if like I'm, didn't give, because you're always like, when it's that kind of thing, you want they want a really dramatic story from you.
Yeah.
And my dramatic story is like growing up in fundamentalist Christianity, growing up during the Holy Laughter revival. And so that is interesting to them. But in terms of like me being super PC or anti-PC, yeah. like I don't really feel like I fall into either of those categories. And so, and I was kind of trying to explain that, but it's interesting because it's like, they kept being like, well, so do you feel like you have, like you can't say those things? And I'm like, I told him, I was like, if a college chooses not to book me based off of any joke that I'm going to say in front of them, then I don't want to be at that college anyway. I was like, I'd rather perform at colleges where I can develop relationships with them over the next few years and be able to perform with them, you know, year in and year out, and then develop an audience in their college. And that's
not exactly good TV.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not, because what they want is like, or maybe what they don't want, I don't know what they want, but like the more compelling or the more dramatic thing will be like, I'm going to say whatever I want. And if they don't like it, or like, I feel, and the other thing is like, I feel like I have to say this and I can't be myself. And then it's like, well, that's your choice to not be yourself on stage. But that's also coming from me not having done it before. It might be a totally weird environment when I get there.
But there's also, there's lots of people who have, you know, not been controversial figures, but have found themselves just getting on the wrong side
of
the group without even meaning to.
I can do that in a heartbeat. I'm real good at that. You should see me in front of any audience. I can get them on my bad, or get on their bad side real quick.
Yeah.
So anyway, you were listening to This American Life.
That's right.
Because we were fortunate enough, we've charted.
They're our main competitor at the moment.
Yes, it's because we're at number, what was the last one, 40?
Yeah.
And they're number one, right?
Yes. So we're getting close.
So it's just one, a few more, and then it's us.
Yep. Yeah.
I like that a lot. Good.
Yeah.
We're coming for it. I don't like the first screenshot I took had us at like, I don't know, it was like 50 or something, but it was right below The Art of Manliness.
I saw that one. Yeah, that was good. I like that. And I was going to make a joke about, I hope we can beat it somehow, some joke about that. And then we did.
Yeah.
So I couldn't use the joke.
I know.
It wasn't a very good joke anyway, but yeah.
That's all right. Anyway, so what did you learn? What did you find out?
Well, I was listening to it. The first story was actually about someone in your world, the YouTube world, Lacey Green, is that correct?
Yes, I know Lacey. She's a wonderful human.
Yeah, it was a fascinating, compelling story where, you know, she found herself getting on the wrong side, first of people who you would say are to the right, and then to people who are kind of liberals. And so she had a fantastic story just about how, you know, she didn't want to be a political figure. I think her main issue was like looking at sex education and sex positivity.
Yeah, a lot of sex. Yeah, she always was very sex positive, and that kind of, I think, led to kind of the intersectional feminist stuff. And then I think she kind of took a turn somewhere along the line.
Yeah. But it made me think of this notion of shibboleth, because I've been thinking about it for a while. It's an old Hebrew word that kind of goes back to this battle that happened. And after the battle, they basically, the Hebrew army worked out that they could tell who the enemies were by asking them to pronounce shibboleth, because the warring group pronounced it differently. And so depending on how they pronounce this word, which I think just means like the grain within a corn.
Something innocuous.
Yeah, something innocuous, but with that.
Not like, how do you pronounce weapon or something?
Yeah. Well, also you can't say that, because as soon as you say, how do you pronounce weapon, you've
told them
how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a problem. But through how they pronounced it, they could either work out if you're a friend or an enemy. And this was a big thing in Northern Ireland, where when I grew up during the Troubles, there was all sorts of shibboleths. Like if you're walking down the street at night, somebody might stop you, a group, and say, you know, say the alphabet. And if you go A, B, C, you were Protestant. And if you went A, B, C, you'd be Catholic.
I got all sorts of stuff now.
Uh-huh.
Now we're talking. I'm excited about this. So, I'm going to throw this out there. It sounds also a lot like what happens to me personally when I hear people say certain words. I will take them and I will go, you're not like me. And
yes.
For example, sometimes a particular word that gets used, and this might get me in hot water, but when I hear the word, something in me is like, maybe we can't have a beer, or you know, we can't have a sit down, or maybe we could. The word is, sometimes people say that something I said is problematic, And and that's and then I kind of go, I don't know, you know, that signifies to me that you're coming from a particular angle that might not align with my kind of sometimes overtly too honest, you know, demeanor that cannot be rough around the edges a little bit. And then the other one, though, is like...
By the way, do you know that you'll probably get lots of people saying this to you now?
I know. Yeah. Please do. That's fun. Then I know. See, yeah, you know what? I just took the power out of it.
Yeah, you did. There you go.
And then the other one is like when people call other people snowflakes or any of that stuff. Yeah, I'm like, you neither. That kind of like right, you know, kind of, oh, what are you going to... So all that stuff. It's fun.
I mean, there's loads of words on all sides. So there's like... I came off social media recently, but things like words like social justice warrior.
Well, let's clarify. Woke. You didn't come off social media.
I didn't. Yes, I just.
You're more active than ever on social media.
I know I am. That's true.
You're just not consuming.
I'm not consuming because I was finding myself getting caught up in weird things. I've always kind of been a bit not a big news person except for like the basics and I find that so much rubbish was being getting into my brain. So
you had too many Jake Paul stories.
I suddenly was getting a lot of that
when
kind
you
of stuff.
Knew more about Jake Paul. I was like, what are you
something's gone very wrong. I know that
when Peter Rollins is like, this kid.
I mean, it took me a long time to even understand this, what was going on.
No one understands it to this day.
What were we saying?
So yeah, you went on social media.
These words that are that designate insiders, outsiders, and that's the thing. It's not about a particular group. We all have them, but sometimes to a greater or lesser extent.
Yeah.
In the 1950s, if you used the word dialectic, that was a signifier that you were a communist.
Oh, the moment you said dialectic, I was like, I knew it. Anytime you say in the 50s, if you blank, it meant you were a communist.
Pretty much anything.
If you were in the 50s and you liked ramen, no, you're a communist for sure.
Yeah.
What are some other examples? What do you got?
Oh, I've got a good one from, again, back home. Is there's a city in Belfast or in Northern Ireland that can only be pronounced in a way that defines whether you're a Protestant or a Catholic. During the Troubles, this was the case. And because there's no neutral way of saying the city. It's very clever. So it was either called Derry or Londonderry.
Whoa, wow.
And if you said Londonderry, you were Protestant. And if you said Derry, you were Catholic. So again, someone could say to you, name the cities in Northern Ireland. And you could say Belfast, that's fine. But when you come to Derry / Londonderry, you don't know what to say.
Now, if you were a Protestant and you became Catholic, for some reason, and would you go from saying one to the other to like make yourself fit in? Like, was it so common knowledge that like people would be like, Londonderry, like, oh, that means this. You're like, oh, I'm different now. Like, if it was in their past, would that be like?
Yeah, but here's the funny thing: Catholic and Protestant were shibboleths as well. They didn't actually refer to your religion. So here's a story from Northern Ireland, true story, I think. This guy was walking down the street, and a group of lads pulled him over to the side, and they said, "Are you a Protestant or a Catholic?" And the guy said, "I'm actually a Muslim." And one of the guys grabs him, pushes him against the wall and says, yes, but are you a Protestant Muslim or a Catholic Muslim?
That's right? Fine, yeah.
And it's like, it's because the even Catholic and Protestant were nothing to do with religion. It was all to do with which community you were part of. So there are people, you said Stroke City, some people said that, but ultimately it was weird. There was a city.
Stroke City. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, it sounds very, I think of heart attacks, strokes and all that. And one other one that's common in some parts of Northern Ireland still is Israel and Palestine. You'll see loyalist communities who'll have Israel flags, and you'll have Republican communities that have Palestinian flags, but they're not really anything to do with the conflict. So you'll have a loyalist group who use neo-Nazi signs, and they'll have swastikas everywhere and the Israeli flag, because the Israeli flag is just a meaningless shibboleth to say that you're part of that community.
But are the swastikas also that, or are they, I'm confused.
Yeah, well, I guess they would be, but you put a lot of, well, some elements of loyalism are sectarian and racist. And so there's some neo-Nazi stuff there. They're close to Combat 18, which is a neo-Nazi group. But also then we'll have the Israeli flag.
Yeah, because it means that they're at least from a particular, that there's some kind of, what does it mean exactly?
Well, I think where it originated is that, first of all, the IRA, which was a Republican paramilitary group, they had some connections with Palestinian groups. And the loyalists felt in the same way that they felt that Palestinians were threatening Israel, and then they felt that Republicans were threatening Northern Ireland. So there was like a minimal association, but nothing to do with really the conflict. So it just became like, do you support Israel or Palestine, with no understanding of the conflict. It was just, if you say Israel, you're a Catholic, but you're not really a Catholic, you're a Republican, but you're not, you know, it's like you're just part of the tribe on the other side of the
river. So it's not like a word necessarily that like you can't say unless you're a part of that group. Like the N-word is one that would be reserved for people. And then the, you know, we're talking about other one. Oh, the there's a D word that I won't say, obviously, that it belonged to members in the LGBT community. And so like there, but it is that different than like Derry and Londonderry, for example? Those are just words that are like, they tell the person hearing that word something about that person, but that's not the same as you can't say that word, that's our word. So that's not a shibboleth. A shibboleth is a indicator.
Well, no, I would say, well, it's an indicator, although I'd say even those words are shibboleths as well, because if someone says, you know, like says just the N word, for example, that tells you a certain thing about them. That's,
yeah,
know,
can tell you a lot.
But even just using the N, not, it, I'm trying, it's funny, saying the N word, but not the word itself, also tells you something. So if someone uses the word, it tells you.
Okay.
So in a way, but there's more to that as well, but they're shibboleths because they tell you, that's the thing about a shibboleth. It's not good or bad. Sometimes it tells you in a good way, oh my goodness, they are not a kind of community I want to associate with. And sometimes they're not good, but basically they're signifiers of what group you're part of.
Interesting.
You know? So most words don't signify what group you're part of, but then there's this kind of collection of words or collection of activities that do.
It's like, a more innocuous one to move away from slurs of any kind would be saying like pop instead of Coke or soda or something like that. I mean, and the old thing, I grew up in Florida and people in Florida would be like, Coke means everything. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. I've never understood that.
Oh, is that right? It's like the way people say, I'm going to Hoover. Or is it Hoover or vacuum? Oh yeah, Hoover, because Hoover is a brand, but the brands come to signify everything. Yeah.
Scotch tape, that kind of thing. Even though Scotch is a brand, but it's like, but pop is a...
But that doesn't signify a certain, you're part of an inside group, does it?
It means you're from like the north somewhere else, Midwest or something like that.
All right. So it would be used by some people to go, oh, you're an outsider.
If you come to me and you go, do you guys have any pop? Are you going to grab any pop? I'd be like, oh, you're from not where I'm from.
Yeah.
Would that be?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think of shibboleths as very much insider, outsider. So it's less, oh, you're from a different place. It's more, you're from a bad place. You're one of the enemies.
I like to think that there are people listening to this who can relate to not entirely understanding.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's like a value in that, because as I'm doing it, I'm like, I wonder... There's two types of people listening right now. One person is like, Elliot, get it through your head what it is. And then there's the other person who's like, no, I'm also a little confused. I think I understand what it is, but not in a way that I could accurately explain it to somebody. Yeah.
Well, you sound like you do. Like, yeah, basically, it's what we're talking about. It's a word that designates, are you part of my team or the other team?
It's so interesting, because what I like about this is what we're roundabout talking about is the culture that we currently live in right now, with like the PC culture, which I'm pretty sure people like to talk about more than they like to talk about basically anything. It does something that, like, when, you know, especially just getting off this call and it's like this series that they're doing, and there's something about it that is like, it's like it does something to people on a level that is so, I don't know how to describe it. It's like sinewy is the word that I want to use. It sounds like I'm high right now, but I'm not. It's like it's something about it where it's like when you get into these stories and you get into the weeds about words you can and can't say and words that are reserved for other people, and then when you get into the weeds with people who are, you know, wanting to say what they want to say, there's something about the discussion of political correctness itself that just to me feels very, like, almost dirty. Like, does that make sense? And like, but it comes from oftentimes, I think, people with good hearts on both sides who are just wanting to, like, either progress or maintain who they are as a person. And it's just sad that this conversation that on a cultural level has become so diluted and so, like, just the same conversation happening over and over again. And so something with like the shibboleth seems like something that is a way you could approach it that's a little different than the typical conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the term PC is a bit of a shibboleth. Like when people use that term.
Even political correctness,
even that word kind of starts to say, oh, you're one of them or you're one of us from using that term.
Mm-hmm. But classical liberalism.
Yes.
That's another one.
Is that right? Wow.
When people say classical liberalism, it just means that they're like, you know, that, I mean, I have no problem with that, but it's a term that's used to keep them from, in my opinion, having to use the term conservative. They have more conservative tendencies, at least in financial areas. But anyway,
I wonder if that's a way, but to try to also avoid the kind of, because when shibboleths happen and there's insiders, outsiders, then we have to create new language that tries to just be a little bit more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And
calling it something like classical liberalism does kind of feel like an olive branch, or like at least attempting to have some kind of a bridge where you can meet somebody halfway with your language.
Yeah. I was going to say, because it's not about difference. Difference is fine. It's about a term that makes you like, oh, they're one of them.
Yep.
So whenever you bring in a word and you go, okay, it's classical liberalism, that's at the moment feels less kind of jarring. Like, oh, you're either in my team or you're in the other person's team.
Yeah. And then what happens, though, I think, is people on the left kind of assume like some kind of nefarious element to that, and then they get paranoid and they go, why are you calling yourselves that? Like, that's not what you are. And then they feel like they're being sold something.
Yes.
Because the person on the, you know, the classical liberal side is like, if I use this term, it's like how I can relate to you and use language to connect.
Yeah.
But then they, you know, oftentimes people kind of put up their defenses, which is understandable too.
And that's another element actually, which is important, is that the idea of a shibboleth is it doesn't have meaning. So for example, whenever you say something like the word, say Milo, as an example.
Milo?
Milo is not that guy who's on YouTube.
Yiannopoulos? Milo?
Yeah. He, like, whenever people use that word, it's rarely now connected to what he's saying. So it's kind of disconnected from meaning. It's a term that just defines. So individuals can become shibboleths. Whenever a term no longer has any meaning as such, so you say a word like political correctness and it doesn't actually, we're not talking about the philosophy of it, just those very words.
Yeah.
If you use them, I think that's on the right. People, if you say you're PC, that usually designates that someone's on the right.
You know what's interesting about you're totally right. Yeah.
The obsession with PC can
also be a very right thing. Whereas people on the left are like, it's not PC, we're just wanting you to not be a jerk about things, you know?
Yeah, but even whenever people use the word PC, it sounds to me, although I'm not from America, it sounds to me like it's a negative term.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a negative. Yeah. So whenever someone says, oh, that's PC, they're usually saying, yeah.
No one on the left is like,
PC's bad.
Well, that's not true. I mean, plenty of people on the left, I think, are like that. But it's the Milo thing is interesting because speaking of becoming a shibboleth or an individual becoming a shibboleth, it's like, I remember when he was rising and he was rising very quickly and he kept saying these things and his defense was always, you know, there needs to be people who say offensive things because that's the only way you can change things. Otherwise you just end up, it's like, it was kind of this, I guess a perverse sort of strength where you're being this like bombastic guy for the sake of everyone, you know, and all that. And I'm like, I was going like, I don't think so, buddy. And I was like, let's see how this experiment goes, because I don't think you can change people's hearts and minds in any way by being overtly offensive or by coming at them at that level of negativity. And so then to see now, because I think you're right, like he has become such a shibboleth and such a like removed from what he said. And it's like, well, is that what you wanted? Because now no one's listening.
No one listens anymore. Yeah. It's not even about agreement or disagreement, because I've heard a couple of things, but I've never really listened to what he has to say. But I'm going like, but if I wanted to, you know, I would listen to some seminars or some interviews. But the word now is disconnected from that.
Yeah.
It's like it's either, if you like him, you're saying that you're on the right. If you don't like him, you're saying you're
totally
liberal or whatever.
JBP.
JPP, what's that?
Jordan B. Peterson.
Oh yes, he's another one that's become that word has become a shibboleth.
Yeah, there's a it's such a weird thing. I was having a conversation about this with a friend of mine, and she kind of like will say things, and she'll use language, and she's completely apolitical. Like she has truly no like affiliation and no kind of like bias that she's aware of. So it's interesting to talk to her about politics or anything like that, because I was like, you know, you kind of have like, I was like, you speak in a way and you use language in a way that sounds like you kind of lean a little right, like a little, like it's that kind of, you know, there's that very, I won't go into like details about it, but it's in the, you can pick up on where she stands based off of the language that she's using without her ever even consciously being like, oh, this is what I believe. This is my political. And I kind of like that. I think about that like in terms of where I stand, because I truly don't know when it comes to, so much of politics. And so it's interesting when shibboleths bite me, because I end up, I'll reference something that is a shibboleth and not knowing it.
Yeah.
And then it allows people to put me in a box, and that's not good for my brand.
Yes.
Because when people put you in a box and they know what you think and they know what side of the fence you are standing on, they dismiss you, and that's not fun.
Yeah. Well, that's what sounded like it happened to Lacey Green. It's like she used a word that she didn't know was bad or wrong at all. And in fact, maybe even when she made the video, it wasn't seen as bad, but things changed.
Or maybe she knew it was bad, but she did it in a way that was like, it's like when you say an offensive word, like we were talking about the, I made some joke about, it was a Holocaust joke. And it was like something silly that had nothing to do really with the Holocaust. And it was an interesting play that happened, but it was one of those things where it's like, you know, it's bad, so you say it's bad, because it's so absurd that like, that's what, it's so absurd that somebody would say that kind of word within reason, that obviously it's a joke. And so you look at the context, you look at the person, you look at the intention, the motivation, the environment, all these things, you factor all of them and you figure it out. But then, it's interesting. I would bet that's what she was doing. I bet she was making kind of a tongue in cheek thing, or being using a little bit of shock humor, which isn't the best thing in the world, but you do it sometimes. And then it got shockingly snowballed from there.
But also words do change. For like, I have a family member who's elderly, and who said once, we were talking about, I don't know what we were talking about, but she used the word subhuman to describe someone with mental health, or like a, you know, somebody who had intellectual disability. And we all were like, almost spat out our food at the dinner table. It was like,
that would make my day.
That was like, it was incredible. It was like, are you part of the Nazi party?
Yeah. Oh man. Grandparents are the best for that stuff. I remember my nanny used to say stuff where we would just be like, what? Like, it would always be a complete curveball.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh. But you love them, and you know.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, because we talked about it, and she was like, I am so sorry. She's, that's just what the word that we used at that time, because she's not at all like, I mean, in fact, she was talking about someone who in the family, you know, who in the past, so it wasn't negative. It wasn't being said even negatively. It was actually just being said as, oh, you know, that in the family, you know, their son is subhuman or whatever.
My grandma used to say, she used to refer to cats as pussies, and golly, what a delight that was. Especially because we owned a cat, and we owned a pussy, and it was a black pussy. And see, like, it was just all that. Yeah. And that I did not mean to say. So we'll move past that. But she would say stuff like that. She would be like, did you, you know, feed the pussy and all that stuff? And it would just tickle us because I was a kid and I was very immature and, you know.
You could probably manipulate her into saying some kind of crazy things.
Yeah, a whole afternoon. That's how we spend our afternoons. Checkers and try to make grandma say pussy as much as possible. But I don't know what that would be a shibboleth for. I guess just age.
Yeah.
Coming from a different era.
I know. Well, that's it. Sometimes, like, you can get caught out by simply not knowing what the shibboleth is. And that was part of the thing in Northern Ireland, is sometimes you were trying to be caught out. In fact, partly that's the point of a shibboleth. You don't even know you're using it. It's decontextualized. It's out of all context. But supposedly it tells you something. I mean, it doesn't tell you anything. It really just tells you you're not one of me. You're not in my gang. You're in someone else's gang.
Which is hard when you don't know what gang you're in all the time. You know? Like if it's... I mean, I definitely will hear words and be like, okay, that's where you're at. But I'm also like, I don't know if I'm in that same gang as them all the time, especially in this culture that we're currently living in, because everybody, the pawns have gotten so like small and you can go into any particular like, you know, label or whatever. And it's difficult to be able to speak freely without assumptions being made based off of all your goddamn shibboleths.
And you can have like, so we can disagree about something and that's different. So like take literalism in religion. Sometimes someone's a literalist, but literally, they don't know what it means. Like, as in their, it's just a phrase they use. I'm a biblical literalist. And actually, whenever you start to unpack it, you realize, you know, they have, like everybody else, have to have metaphors and they can't read the thing literally. But it's not an intellectual position. It's literally just, I'm part of a team.
Yeah.
But someone else can use the word literalist and they actually mean, oh no, that's what I think and I've got a reasonable, you know, what argument for it, say, for example. Those are two slightly different things. So a shibboleth is like there's nothing beneath it.
Do you feel like the people know that it's a shibboleth? Do you feel like that like people who believe in like literal creationism, do you think that they would identify, like do you think they'd hear that and be like, oh, it's just a signifier that I'm part of this tribe? Because the ones that I've talked to and the ones that I've known growing up, it seems that they truly believe that. It seems that they truly believe that, you know, that's how it went down.
Yeah, well, I mean, interestingly, when I was 17, I got into religion for a bit, right? And I became a six-day creationist. And I read all the books and I got really into it. And I would argue with people black and blue.
Oh, me too. Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah. And if you put a world-class biologist or physicist in front of me, they would not be able to convince me. Not because...
How could you be convinced by someone who's been deceived by the devil?
The devil. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But here's the funny thing, right? They would have had better arguments, etc., but I would never have gone with them. And then I met somebody who I respected, who was more conservative than me, who I think was also a six-day creationist. And they simply said to me, I don't think it's all that important. And I was like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm. Right? And the whole thing collapsed. Because I didn't know it myself, but actually I was just using that term because that was what the other people in my community had. So consciously I thought I was a creationist, and as soon as one of them who I trusted said, I don't think it matters that much, I realized that I thought it was all bullshit, but I hadn't allowed myself to know that it was all bullshit.
Oh, thank God you said that. You know, you're right, it's not important. Okay, I'm gonna go leave the religion now.
And that's how shibboleths fall. It's funny, if you directly attack them, you can't, they're like a fortress.
Yeah.
But if you just undermine the thing that they are holding together, which is usually yourself, then you can break them very easily.
I have a point on that I want to hit in just a second, but real fast to shout out our wonderful sponsors on this particular podcast, The Fundamentalists. If you would like to support this podcast, you can go to trywink.com/fundamentalists. That's trywinc.com/fundamentalists to get $25 off your first order. It's a wine company and they'll send you wine directly to your door. And if you're not sure what kind of wine you like, they'll do a little quiz when you go to the website that'll tell you based off of like how you like your dessert and how you like your coffee, what kind of wine you might like. The labels look really dope. They come in a really cool box and it looks fancy when you take them out.
They are beautiful.
They're beautiful. And we're working on a bottle called Diviner right now because we thought that was appropriate, and we're going to continue to kind of work through these bottles. But if you would like to do that, it helps us out, and we will go out to dinner and talk more, do more podcasts, and maybe eventually get a new Zoom. But at the end of the day, it's just a nice way to help support what we're doing as we try to figure out life and culture and try to sneak up to This American Life and knock them off of the charts.
Yep. We're coming for you.
$25. Oh, and the fundament. Oh, trywink.com/fundamentals. Anyway, so that reminded me of when I was on the phone call with the people with the docuseries. I was telling them, I was like, there's something to be said here for like a little, like offending a little bit. I was like, because I was like, I grew up in the, I grew up in the YouTube world, and the YouTube world is very based on one-on-one interaction with people and like really communicating openly and honestly and consistently with your audience and mm-hmm. directly. And then in stand-up, it's not that at all. Stand-ups get very like, I'm going to do my hour, I'm going to get out of here, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. And, which is fine. But it also like, what happens then is it puts them in a box, I think, where like, if they say something that, because they're so accustomed to not communicating with the audience in some way or seeing the audience as anything other than a collective group, they get so accustomed to that, that when there's pushback, they also see that as a collective big bad thing. Yeah. And I was like, I would rather go to a college, say something that I'm sure something that I will say will be problematic, and I will hear about it, and an individual will tell me. And I was like, I want to talk to that person, because there's been times when somebody has come up to me and they've been like, hey, what you said is problematic. And I've been like, what are you talking about? Nothing I say could ever, because I'm not this, I'm not homophobic or sexist or racist or blah, blah, blah. And then they explain it to me, and I'm like, you're totally wrong, and you're totally, like, you know, I'll take some intellectual, like, bullshit response toward them. And then a day later, I'll be like, actually, that joke is, like, kind of crappy, and I don't really agree with the perspective that I have in that joke. And then I'll pivot, and it sucks, because sometimes they're really well-written jokes, and sometimes they're really well-structured, and sometimes a lot of people find them funny, but I realize that it's not true to who I want to be as a person, and then I end up making that change in myself. But it doesn't happen unless, and then a lot of times the reverse happens. It's like I get so offended, and the moment I come up to them and I'm like, look, I'm from the South, I'm from this, I work in entertainment, this is where I'm coming from, and if that's the, you know, and then oftentimes the opposite happens, where they're like, oh, okay, you know, like I understand where you're coming from. But it's in that one-on-one interaction. And I was like, I want that to happen. Like, I would rather have a one-on-one interaction with a college student who is in a very pivotal point in their life than to hide behind my material in a way that just says I'm going to be as offensive as possible or censor myself. Like, there's a way where I can just be like, this is who I am. And if the college doesn't like it or if the student doesn't like it, we can go from there.
Yeah. And at the moment...
This is on my mind. That's why I brought it up.
No, very great. Because, like, I mean... As well, when we're confronted by an audience or an individual in any way directly, so I see you treating your brother badly and I'm like, you're an asshole to your brother. Mm-hmm. Even if you think I'm right, your first reaction, because I'm attacking you, is to defend yourself. You go like, no, my brother's a nightmare. You don't understand.
He is.
Yeah. I've met him. Yeah. but then if we go for a drink and I talk about, man, you seem really stressed at the moment, you're more likely to go, yeah, I am, and I really took it out on my brother. So your defenses go down and you can listen. And yeah, so what you're talking about is how do we get to a place where we're not just attacking each other? Because that never gets anywhere. Even if I think someone's right and they attack me, I am going to defend myself. Mm-hmm. Just unconsciously, your defenses come up. But if I get into a conversation with somebody and they're like, well, you know, I don't know if I agree with you on this, and I go like, and it's a little bit softer, then your defenses go down and you really can go, oh yeah, well maybe that wasn't appropriate what I'm saying, and maybe I have to rethink that.
Learning to do that and learning to like be like, oh man, I messed up, like that I was kind of a dick there, I think maybe we've talked about this a little bit, but I always kept everything very bottled up, and then now there's a little bit of like overcorrection. But I noticed that like last night I was a little stressed out during the podcast, and I just felt like a lot of anxiety. Yeah. And I came back and you're like, how are you? And I was like, I'm like, something's going on. And I knew I was more like just not where I should have been in the correct headspace to be doing that, the podcast. And then like, I just was like, oh, I think I'm real stressed out. And then like, but it took a little bit of like being, the first step was going, I kind of dropped the ball. Something in me felt very not in control during the podcast. And I was like, something is up. Otherwise, instead though, what was happening was what you're saying is kind of this, like my initial instinct was to be like, I'm fine, you know?
Yeah. And if I'd said to you, oh man, you're really grumpy or something, that would have probably made your defenses even higher. But if I was saying, oh man, are you all right? You seem stressed. That you were able to go, yeah, maybe I am.
Well, you noticed it immediately the other day because I got real quiet about something. Yeah. And it took like 10 seconds. And you're like, you're quiet.
I mean, that's something we should talk about actually in future podcasts, but defenses. But splitting is a very basic defense where, as you know, if you break up with somebody, you'll often go, they're evil, terrible, bad, and I'm pure and innocent and good. Or you're in an argument with a friend and your friend is all bad and you're an innocent.
I mentally had that thought this morning when I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I was like, I'm doing this thing where I was like, why am I viewing, you know, this situation in this particular way? And I was like, oh, it's just because I'm like putting all the bad on that thing. And it's like, that's not the reality at all.
And the reason why we do that is because there's nothing wrong with it. That's a way your body defends against suffering. The only problem with it, the main problem with it, is it just causes more problems than it solves. Mm-hmm. So eventually you have to kind of go, and a good friend will say to you, listen, at the right moment, like maybe that person you broke up with, you know, maybe you're just really hurt and that's why you're so angry. And if they say that at the right time, the person can go, yeah, maybe that's
always
right.
Hurt. It's always just hurt.
Yeah.
Anger ain't nothing but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, me.
I know. And when you're able to bring it up like that, when you're actually, then suddenly you're like, oh yeah, and maybe I can move on. If you don't get that place, you won't move on. But if you can get that place, not only can you move on, you might even be able to shake that person's hand in the future and go, oh, I wish things had worked differently.
Yep,
but
yep.
I do wish you the best.
Process it. So beautiful. Not to, we're detouring a little bit. We detoured. Yeah. So what else you got on shibboleths?
Well, I'm interested. So we've obviously defined a little bit what a shibboleth is, and we've said that the weird thing that they're not meaningful. They rather contain meaning. In philosophy, it's called a master signifier, which means it's a word that doesn't mean anything, but it holds a whole pile of meanings. So in Northern Ireland, when someone says, are you a Catholic or a Protestant? It doesn't really mean anything to do with what those words mean in the dictionary. It simply means, were you born on that side of the river or this side of the river? You know, yeah. are you one of them or one of us?
Do I like you or do I not like you?
Yes, exactly.
Are we friends or are we not friends?
Yeah.
That reminded me of the whole thing of like, which is just blows my mind. And it's also like very meditative and all that, but like the look at the tree and you're like, the tree's not the tree. The tree is just the tree, but it's, you call it the tree. So you look at the tree and you try to forget that it's called a tree.
Oh, yeah.
And you see the tree for what it is. And you see the tree for this life that's sprouting out of the earth and reaching toward the heavens. And you're like, oh my God, it's this beautiful thing. And your words can't ever describe it because there, you know, it's not that. Like the words were just made up to help describe it, but it can never get there. Yeah. And I like that. That's fun.
Yeah.
And I like that as a meditative thing.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm going to go after this and I'm going to stare at a tree.
That's good. Well, that's similar to what Heidegger says. When he talks about how today we often look at everything, people and things as resources. So a tree is a way to get fuel or to build furniture, or a person is someone who's going to, you know, an exchange, you buy something off them. And actually we have this, he calls it a technological way of looking at everything, and that in a sense we now disconnect from encountering things outside of their utility, outside of their technical value. So yeah, that sounds like a good way to meditate.
Yeah, I like it a lot. But that only relates to the shibboleth in the sense that it's like there's no actual meaning in any word.
Yeah.
But you're saying that like it's a particular word that when you say it, it just has like, it carries with, language is so crazy. If I could like have knowledge downloaded into my head, linguistics and like the history of language would be something that I would do really quickly.
I mean, it's a fascinating subject. And one of the things about language, which you said, we may have talked about it before, is that, yeah, words have no meaning in and of themselves. They just point to other words. So language is like a dictionary. Every time you look up a word, it points to other words. But what a master signifier does is it pulls together all of this kind of chaos under it, kind of it brings order to the chaos. But technically, a language is like a dictionary. Words have meaning in so far as they're placed beside other words.
Mm.
It's kind of like a chess set. You've got a chess set. Technically, if you lose a pawn, you can just get a penny and use that in its place.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's important is not the shape of the pawn. What's important is
winning.
Were it, yeah, what's important
is winning. Destroying your opponent. I got it.
Yep.
Shibboleths are for destroying your opponent. Yeah. That's very interesting. Do you have words that you, when you hear in the world of philosophy, that make you go like, oh, we're on different sides of the, because you have this sort of, you, obviously you have a psychoanalytic approach to things, but do you feel like when you hear certain things, you're like, is there anything that would make you go, oh, this person hates Freud or something?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's lots of words that I think are shibboleths. I mean, in terms of politics and stuff, like big words like capitalism or communism and words like this, when people use them, often they're not using them because they have a deep understanding of maybe that what that means. They're using it to kind of connect with a certain group.
Yeah, if you say socialist here, it's very charged. And I was talking to somebody who's from another country, and they were like, yeah, it's not like that here. They're from like Northern Europe, and it's like, it's like that word is not at all like a bad thing. And here it's like, oh my God, you say socialism or socialist, and it's like, you know.
Yes, I had to learn that when I came here, that there's certain words that are not charged at all back home. So, and that was one of them, because like in the academy in Europe, whether or not you're a Marxist, it doesn't matter. Marx is a thinker that you all read and you all kind of like engage with.
That's so funny.
It's funny. So like you would talk about Marx, and that would never commit you to saying I agree or disagree. It's like, oh, and when Marx talks about, but when I came to America, I was like, oh, that word is charged.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
Like if you say that you're into like Karl Marx or you're reading Marx, or you're a Marxist, it is a really good way to get dismissed really quickly from a lot of conversations.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, and there'll be ones on the other side, but because I'm from Ireland coming here, I know all those ones.
Yeah, is there any that you feel comfortable saying that, like, or do you have a like, do you hesitate to say the word because they're charged? Like, do you have that kind of within you? Do they carry weight?
No, because the great thing is I think people understand that you're an outsider sometimes, but I'm trying to think of the ones that you would have trouble with if you went from America I don't know what they are because I'm not American, I'm sure there are ones.
There's a drink that we serve in America that is very offensive, and they say never to order it.
What, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't even know what you're talking
really?
About.
Really?
Yeah.
I hesitate to say it because it's a very thing, and I would, you know, try not to say things.
Is it an Irish related one?
Yeah.
Oh yes, I do know that one. Yeah, I heard. Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem, I don't think.
Well, I'm not going to order it though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Irish vehicle explosion.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I know. But no, but see, our humor is so cutting that's actually fine. Like the Northern Irish, you know that we love each other because we say such nasty things to each other. But this isn't a shibboleth, but it's a nice little example of differences. A very weird difference is in Ireland, and actually in most of the world, I've heard, like in most of Europe, but Ireland's one particular place where this happens. If you ask, would you like a drink? In Ireland, you always say no, first time. and second time. You'll only say yes the third time. Or food, if you go to someone's house.
Right,
and
we had this problem when we moved in together.
Yeah, because it's such a bizarre thing.
Because I'd be like, you want food? And you'd be like, no. And I'd be like, all right.
And then I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? That's so rude.
That's so funny.
And you don't even notice you're doing it. It's funny. So I was around at Rob and Kristen's the other day. And again, it was like, would you like a drink? Now, thankfully, Kristen knows this now. So she, but it was so obvious she was doing it on purpose. She went like, are you sure? But I did it. I said no twice. And then she asked a third time. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'd love a drink.
Yeah, I remember at one point I was like, do you want a drink? Do you want a drink? Do you want a drink?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just get right to the point. Yeah.
I don't have time to waste on your Irish etiquette. I'm trying to drink here, Pete.
Yeah. It's funny because America's one of the few cultures, supposedly, where you answer directly the first time. And Britain, supposedly, as well.
I like that.
Yeah, it's good.
I work on that as a sign of like my own personal growth and being like as direct as possible and quickly as possible.
But you have your own, like you guys say, as an Irish person, you walk into a shop in America and they say, so what do they say? How are you doing? Or how do they greet you in a shop?
I forget. How's your day going?
Yes, how's your day going? And the first time you hear that, you're like, oh, well, listen, thanks very much for asking. Are you able to talk about this?
Did you really do that when you heard it the first time?
It is definitely shocking. It's definitely like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I had an argument with my mum earlier, but I mean, we're going to make it up tonight. And yeah. it's kind of weird.
We have a psycho in the story. Like you see him hitting the button on the bottom of the counter.
But because for you Americans, you know that that's not asking, how's your day?
I still answer it sincerely though, but I definitely answer it in a vague way.
Yeah,
it's more of like, it's definitely meant to be a short answer.
Yes, under 3 seconds. At worst,
I'll be like, it's going all right.
Yeah,
and like, but in my tone, that's like, that's if I'm having a really bad day.
Yeah,
I'll be like, yeah, it's all right.
But you also still know that it's a under 3 second response. They're not looking for you to bare your soul, you know. But it's like, but you know, so that's a. That what do you call that? But you know that it's not literal.
Yeah.
And we all have that, you know. Psychotics can't get really confused with that because they hear things literally. So you know, it's very hard for someone who's more psychotic to navigate the fact that say a party, we're constantly saying things that we don't really think. But we all know how the grammar works.
Yeah.
You know, someone says, I want you to leave. In an argument with your partner, but you know that what they're saying is, I want you to fight to stay. But they can't say that, of course, because then you could just stay. You know, you can, by saying, I want you to leave, they're actually communicating, I want you to stay.
Yep.
So if you say, well, okay, I'm going to leave, the person can go, what the hell are you doing? Well, you told me to leave. And they're like, you're like, no, I want you to fight to stay. You
know? One time I was in a fight with someone and I said, I wanted them to leave. But I meant it.
You really did? Oh, no, you didn't.
They ended up not leaving, but I did mean it.
Oh, you did mean it, yes.
I was definitely like, no, I really think it's a good idea.
No, I want to be literal here. Yeah. I think it's really
Please
good
understand.
Idea. If you...
It is absolute. I know where I'm at, and you should not. We should end this.
Yeah.
and then that was, and then the thing there, especially with, and you know, that dynamic is always like, we should work it out. And I'm like, there's no working it out from me right now. Yeah. I am too limited and angry at you, so please leave.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's fun. What a fun world.
That would be a good topic at some stage, language and how language works.
Oh, I thought you just meant like relationship fighting.
Yeah, just your fights with girls. Yeah, yeah, that would be good.
Yep. Yeah. Oh my God, there's been a few.
Another thing then about a shibboleth, because I think you were about to bring us back. You were going to say...
No, go for it, yeah.
Oh, no, oh, yeah. I was thinking is the funny thing about a shibboleth as well is the third thing is whenever you're in a group, you know when to break the rules. So, for example, you might have a shibboleth, a word that you would never use. In fact, if someone else used it, you're like, oh, that's a symbol that they're not in our group. But then privately with your mates, you can use it or you can text that word to somebody. And so... There's this weird thing.
Oh, I know exactly an example that I won't say because I would only say it around my friends. But absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where if I heard somebody say it, I'd be like, oh, no.
Yeah. And that's it. That's how, like, so for example, So this is the idea that there's an underlying meta set of rules. So like I went to an upper class party once where, I was very nervous because I was like, will I use the right wine glasses? Will I use the right knives and forks? Right? I drink wine out of a cup or whatever. So I went and I was very sure when they were pouring white wine, I took the white wine glass when it was, everyone was standing around. And then someone else who has been part of that world all their life, they just came in, picked the first cup up that they could find and poured the wine into it, right? Mm-hmm. So they were breaking the rules. I'd learnt the right rules of how to act in that environment, but I hadn't learnt when it's okay to break the rules.
Yeah.
So you can often tell that a person is not part of the group, not when they do something wrong, but when they do it too correctly.
I know, that's such an uncomfortable situation for people who are, you know, I mean, not, I don't know if it's necessarily across the board with like upper class people, but a lot of times just in outsiders and insider groups and stuff and like cliques and whatever you want to call them, oftentimes there's this kind of like somebody's putting on their, you know what it is in comedy, it would be in stand-up comedy, Mike and I talk about this a lot. There is a thing that happens where comedians will feel a need to be bitty, especially very new comedians. Mm-hmm. And they'll feel this need to, when they're backstage, be on and be funny and be humorous. And every line's got to be at that. And it's they think that they're doing what a comedian does, which is make jokes, but they're not doing what comedians actually do, which is typically, unless, you know, obviously comedians come in all shapes and sizes, but our particular friend group is more like, no, we're going to chill out, talk, relax. If we laugh or something happens, we'll joke around with it, about it. But like if somebody comes in and they're just, hey.
Yes. They know the rules, but they don't know the meta rules of when to break the rules.
And it's so annoying. Yeah. And it was one of the first things that like really turned me off to just performing a lot of stand-up comedy in general is because I didn't want to hang out with the comedians because I didn't want to hear all their bad, like bitty jokes constantly. And I was like, it's exhausting. And I've found in the comedians that I'm friends with, they're just genuine people and they're just very honest. And then it's kind of like the same thing. It sounds like with the glass thing where it's like that person came in and they were like, yeah, this is the glass I'm grabbing, you know? And there's a level of comfort there. And it seems like it's not, I mean, there's definitely meta rules, but it almost just seems like that's someone being comfortable in their own skin, whereas you weren't comfortable in your own skin in that environment.
But absolutely. But there's a thing, but where when you're new to a group, when you're new to a group with its own rules, you're extra careful to try to obey all the rules. And what's interesting about insider groups is they've got the rules and then they've got the, they also know when they can break them.
Yeah.
So like I'm a big fan of Columbo. Columbo's like best American TV program ever.
Yeah, besides Boy Meets World, fine. Okay, cool.
Besides what?
Boy Meets World.
Boy Meets World. Oh, I haven't never watched that.
Oh, well, you probably would not like it.
Is that right? Okay.
It's a teen, well, it's a sitcom from the late 90s. But anyway,
Columbo was brilliant at kind of always, you know, working out the criminal. I don't know if they ever had this episode, but it's the kind of thing Columbo would have done, where if you want to work out, say, if the KGB have infiltrated the CIA, and you, instead of thinking, okay, when is this Russian person going to do something wrong? That will be what will tell you that they're an infiltrator, or when the police infiltrate a left-wing group.
Yeah.
But no, the trick is to look to see if they do everything too correctly. That is always the tell. The tell of somebody being an outsider trying to infiltrate a group is that they know all the rules, but they don't know when to break them. And that's when you know you're a true friend of somebody.
Dude, I think about this in the YouTube world because so many YouTubers, especially if you go to things like VidCon and Playlist Live and all these things, there are these panels where people have tried to dissect all the rules on how to be a successful YouTuber. And the people who are all actually successful at it, myself not included, solo. Like, I don't get it on a solo level, but obviously with my group, there's a little bit more of a traction there, but like there's people who they try to go by, like, you upload at this time, you upload this thing, you upload that, da 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 da, and then you go and you network and you hand your card out. Like, entertainment is filled with people who think they know the rules, and there's no gosh darn rules. And then when you present yourself in a way that's rule based and this is how I'm supposed to act as an actor or as a performer in any way, it tells everyone who knows or has been in this for a little bit that you are new and you don't know quite what you're doing yet.
But the thing is, there's loads of rules, but they don't know Because they're good rules.
Yeah,
and because you're still doing them as well, but you also know when to break the rules. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. So that person is, look, say they look to you and they go, right, I'm going to learn from Elliot. And they do learn all the rules because you're doing certain things. You know when to put things out, what time to put things out, what analytics to use. But you also know when to break the rules. Mm-hmm. That's what being a veteran is. But they don't know that because that meta language is the harder one to get to know. So the shibboleth is a funny example where you go like, oh, we would never say this. But behind closed doors, you do. Like I lived in a squat for a while with a whole pile of different people. And you knew you were friends when you could say terrible things about each other.
Yep.
When they could say sectarian things about me and I could say sectarian things about them, which were things that you would never say outside the group because they would be terrible and wrong.
And it doesn't mean that if somebody came up to you and said some crappy thing that they're your friend now.
No, exactly. In fact, yeah, people try that sometimes.
I get that. Oh my God, the assumed familiarity is the worst. People are like, I'm like, no, you don't get to talk to me like that. My friends can talk to me like that. And that's how that
And that's goes. It. That's a very sophisticated dance to know when you can actually make that joke. Like maybe the first time that we hung out, the first few times we hung out, there's a certain point when I go, I wonder if I can like slag Elliot off here. Like, you know, but the first time you do it, it's always a risk.
And you remember when you did it, I freaked out. I said, how dare you?
We didn't talk for a year.
Yeah.
I didn't know you.
Would you remember
your hair
time?
Meant that much to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was beautiful. I do regret some of the haircuts I chose. Do you remember the time that you slagged? That you said something?
No, I'm trying. I can't. Do you remember?
No,
I don't know. Remember, but I know there's always
that would
a time.
Be, if I remembered it, it would probably mean it held a ton of significance. And if it held a ton of significance, that wouldn't be like.
But it's like dating. It's like when you ask someone out, there's always inherently a risk because if they don't accept it, you're a creepy, pervy, whatever. But if they do accept it, that's like really nice. But there's always an inherent risk.
It's always really
risk.
Nice to find out you're not a creepy perv.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for that to happen.
I know one day.
Yeah, one day. But there's this inherent risk. But you know. Know that when you can be inappropriate with somebody, that's when the friendship is really deep. But it's a very hard dance to make.
We'll learn it. We're gonna get there. I think the good news with all this stuff is we will end up being perfect in life. That's the good news. You know, is that you can get to a place where everything you say is true, good, holy. No one ever takes it the wrong way. You're completely understood by everyone, and you're loved 100%. By everyone, and you love everyone. Yeah, so I'm excited about that. It should take a month or two. And we'll get there.
Just one thing. Do you think there's any concrete takeaway from this conversation?
I think the concrete takeaway, if I had one myself, is just to bear in mind in everyday conversation the fact, not to try to like allow it to necessarily affect your speech within reason, but like to just hold a little knowledge that there's so many different things happening in language, so much more than we give it credit for. And that's just like verbal language, not to mention all the other things. And I think that's nice. And that's my, what about you?
That's very good. Yeah, I guess maybe to kind of try to be aware of our shibboleths are the kind of the words that we use to define who's in and who's out.
Right.
And to try to find language that blurs the distinctions a little bit more, opens the possibilities for genuine discussion and genuine difference rather than you just enemy friend. Because one thing about that, actually, Dylan Moran, have you ever heard of Dylan Moran?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, great Irish comedian. But he once made a joke, and part of the joke was, this isn't the funny bit, he just said it very profoundly. He said, war is not conflict. War is the inability to have conflict. So you have a war because you just want to kill the other person because you can't stand to be in a discussion with them. Whereas conflict is like, oh my goodness, we're going to be in this room together and we're going to argue it out. And shibboleths are war. They create inside and outside. And what we need is conflict.
Yeah. That's nice. I like that a lot. That's beautiful. All right, guys. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Fundamentalists.
Just to sing a hymn, I think, but I read that story of all.